came in peace for all mankind. Welcome back to the NASA vending machine. It's the one that isn't smashed by Mars rioters. I'm Jason Snell, and joining me to discuss season 5, episode 6 of For All Mankind. No sudden moves, Dan Morin.
I wouldn't even dream of it. I feel like the NASA part has become increasingly less relevant in this show.
I know. So maybe the M6. I mean, we picked a name. We picked a name for season 2.
We can't just call it the vending machine. That doesn't make any sense.
No, Mars vending machine. Whatever it is, it's a vending machine. That's who we are. We're back at the Space Center in Houston with our, you know, chips and cookies and stuff. Yeah, no sudden moves. This is things get real in this episode. This is the episode where things go down. If you thought last episode was the things going down, no,
I was teeing up the ball.
Yeah, that was the, like you said, it's the little gunpowder going to the bomb, little trail. Yep. Light it, and you know, light the fuse, and off it goes. So. Yeah, no sudden move. So Polipinov, our governor, they were coming for him in the last episode at the Moxie at Mission Control. And guess what? We start with him saying, hey, we're going to get back to you on communicating in a while later. And then we realize he's got a gun to his head as he's sending this communication out there. Also, I don't know if you noticed, Dan, but the sound effect to turn the radio on and off is just one of those computer data sound effects that we use on The Incomparable all the time.
It's like, I don't think I did notice.
Yeah, they're basically playing clips from the Incomparable Clip Show. It's weird.
It's weird how Skeletor was on the other end. I didn't expect that.
This is that episode where the dog catches the car because the people who are in the Moxie are like, what's the plan? We're going to stop the automation. How? Let's turn off the comms and talk about it.
Yeah. This is so I'm always fascinated by who the quote unquote main characters are, right? Like there's a main cast to this show, and it's many of the people that we know. But then in this episode, so much of this focuses on the character Gerardo or Jer, who is kind of the de facto running the show for the beginning of this, at least. And we know he's been around for a while. We've seen him. He's like of the Miles's cadre. He's kind of the more revolutionary one. But he is not a character who has really, I think, been in the forefront of this. And in this episode, he very much steps into the forefront of all of the action. And you get the idea that he is not well suited for this role.
Terribly suited. He happens to be. This is, I mean, one of the lessons of this episode is when you're planning your revolution, sometimes you're not planning your revolution. Things happen.
It just happens.
And the challenge is, I was thinking about this, like, ideally, you want somebody smart and measured and. Have them be the guy holding the gun at the mission control. That is not the case here. Now, you know, the question is like, what happens next? But this guy is a hothead. He has not really thought this through, and has a kind of simple view of the world of like, well, we're going to stop it now. And it's like, well, how are we going to do that? So the spaceships can't contact Mars. Dev and Aleta are at Helios. They know that something is going on, but they're kind of like walled off at the Helios complex. In the med bay, Alex says he's fine. Lily seems stable, but she's got a head injury, probably a concussion, but Alex seems to be cleared of any of that. And so our guy at Moxie sends a message out to everybody, and this is when Miles' wife is like, that guy is a disaster. You got to get up there.
Yeah.
She's not wrong.
He issues one of the lines that is the line that you never want to hear from somebody in this position. If you're calm, nobody else gets hurt.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, people have already gotten hurt, which you're acknowledging in that statement.
Yeah.
And if you're calm, this is not a situation where people are going to remain calm.
Yeah. Why would I be calm now? And it's very clear this guy is coded as just like he's a mess and he's going to get everybody killed. So Miles's wife saying you got to go up there is right. Of course, Miles is then caught by Mars peacekeepers and beaten up, but
lightly beaten.
He's truncheoned, but Boyd is there and takes him. And this is a really interesting dynamic, right? Which is she's a Mars peacekeeper, so are they, and they're like, how do we know what side you're on? And she's like, what do you mean? I'm a peacekeeper. And they're like, yeah, some of them are siding with them. And you're like, oh boy, this is not great. Cause now they're all paranoid too. And so she beats on Miles a little bit. And I'm just thinking to myself, boy, these are the bad guys. These Mars peacekeepers here. Which side are you on? These are the bad guys. So she gets Miles out of there, and Miles is like, "Do you have to hit me so hard?" It's all that kind of business. And he says, "You need to come with me. I'm going to Mission Control. But you need to change out of your outfit.
Yeah, don't wear the uniform.
Don't wear the uniform.
It's a bad look.
That's right.
I find that I do like this dynamic a lot. And we saw, I don't know how much we got with the two of them previously. We knew
she ate
in the restaurant, and we saw her interact with Ilya.
But they're like, these are our center pragmatist characters,
yes.
Right? She's the cop who's the good cop who wants to do the right thing and is disturbed by the... And she wants order, right, like Miles does, but she's disturbed by the essentially the corruption and all of that. She's against that. And Miles is, you know, he's got his checkered past, but he is, like we said last time, a businessman who, you know, wants the right thing and doesn't want bad outcomes and unreasonable things that other people might want. So in some ways, they are two perfect... It's a perfect pair because they are the forces of kind of like order. They're not the bad guy, but they're also, as we find in this episode, she's also aggressively not entirely on their side because that is also the side of chaos to her.
Right. And I think what's also important to remember, given where we left off last week, is that she has realized that essentially she cannot trust the peacekeepers at all because she knows that Palmer was involved with all these illicit shipments and everything. And so she's like, well, if there's going to be any chance of like kind of circumventing them, I need to have someone else essentially have power here that we can use because I can't trust the authorities.
Can't trust any of them.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
This is also throwing some gas on the fire. Polibanov says, you know what? You're terrorists. You know what we do? We'll hang terrorists like you. When we get control of this situation, you will pay for your crimes. Way to defuse things, Governor.
I think this basically is what leads to him of being duct taped, his mouth being duct taped shut. There's a weird move here, too, where Irina... I'm trying to read what she's up to. She is doing machination, but she kind of like smiles when he gets duct taped. She's like,
"Oh yeah,
well, you're an idiot."
Like, she knows that he's an idiot. Like that is. I'm sure she's very satisfied that that guy is not talking anymore because she doesn't want to get killed. But also she's gotten a read of this guy and she's like, "Who is this guy? Forget
he's
this
a stuff shirt."
Yeah. That's because what he says is really stupid. And I honestly am surprised that he doesn't get killed in this episode.
Yes.
Because I think he and Palmer both, it's like these guys are almost cartoonish in their behavior.
Yeah,
like
they're central casting villains.
Come on. Cut to, oh no, what is this? Marines in spacesuits assaulting. How did Palmer get access to like spacesuits and explosives to assault a base? And they come in and they shoot a bunch of people, and then it's revealed this is just an exercise for the Moon Marines, including Avery. But I'm sure it's not foreshadowing a conflict anything.
I wrote foreshadowing in all capital in my notes.
Yeah, my note says, this is foreshadowing.
Yeah. I think they cut it very obviously to make it feel like that, but So
no, it's the Silence of the Lambs. We're like, we're rushing into the building. We're going to save the day. Oh, it's a different building. That kind of thing. Yeah.
I believe they're still on Earth because later on they're still in that bar.
Yeah. There's gravity and it's not moon gravity. It's not like a moon training. It's Earth training.
Interested in this because we've seen less and less, I think, as we discussed, there's less and less action that happens on Earth. And in fact, that's part of, we discussed in the last episode, how it's like, you want to believe there's two points of view, but actually the show is really showing you one. And because we spend so much of our time on Mars, those are where our characters are for the most part. Like, at this point, the episodes are almost entirely on Mars, right? This is the first time, I think last episode was entirely on Mars.
Yeah. The last episode had the arena flashback
before
the credits.
Yeah. But other than that, we're pretty much only following the Mars action. And that's true except for Avery's storyline here, which is only really a couple scenes. And this is also where I gotta admit, Jason, I did not recognize the other character here for a bit. Everybody makes fun of the one guy who's like the Marzi, who is basically mocked one of them for being like, oh, your helmet seal was wrong, so like you would have been dead, and he helps Avery take her helmet off and everything. And I had forgotten that this is Alex's friend who graduated with him at the beginning of the season and went back, because I like kept staring at him being like, I feel like the show wants me to know who this guy is.
I had the same feeling, which is like, this has got to be one of the kids, but I don't remember
Haskell.
Him at all.
He's the guy who tells Alex to hook. She's got to hook up with Lily before you leave, like graduation. And he goes off in like episode one or two to go back because he's joining the Marines. So we have a little more of a like. This is going to be actually an interesting dynamic too, right? Because if he is a Marine who's then deployed to Mars, all of a sudden you've got a Marine who is like, well, like even though I maybe don't feel like Mars is my home, I know all these people. Like these are, as opposed to the rest of the crew that's being set up there, who are all from Earth and are just going to be like, nah, whatever. These guys are just, you know, rioters and terrorists. You're going to have somebody potentially in the mix who's like, actually, I grew up with all these people. I know all these people. So it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. More to come from that. Devin and Leda want to get out. And so their security, there's very much the, you don't understand. We don't work for you. You work for us. to the security head, and she's like, "Okay, I'll get a team together because they want to get out and see what's going on." And they're like, "Our people are in mission control, and they took it, and we need to be there." Miles says to Boyd, "We gotta hold this together. You gotta help me." Palmer is going. It's uncovered to the weapons lockers that are stored secretly across the site, so that in the case of unrest, they can get more weapons. And this is Boyd walking that line where she's like, I am not going to go get those weapons. I'm not going to tell you where they are, and I'm not going to go get them and bring them to you, but I will help you stop him from getting more weapons because that's bad. And Miles is like, oh, okay, well, let's do that. So first place, they have the weapons already, but they're like going through the, it's like Peacekeeper base or whatever, and they're going through looking at it, it's all emptied out. But in the background, they see there are people still back there. It turns out it's three Peacekeepers who are not on the other side. They don't like shooting into crowds. They don't like what's going on. And she recruits them and basically says, he's going after the stockpiles. Will you help us? And they say they will. So we're building up a counter force from Boyd to the force of the Peacekeepers. Dev and Elena are stopped by a jumpy Peacekeeper, the private security. And this was a kind of a nice scene, kind of talks the Peacekeeper down and is like, we're private security. We have authority for our people. You need to stand down and not point a gun in the face of the executives of my company while we've got our private security team here. So everybody's on edge. And then Dev wants to check on Alex because Dev, even though Alex told him off, Dev is concerned about Alex, which I think is really interesting. It's like, this is his surrogate son in a way. Yeah,
he does have an emotional connection for sure.
Exactly.
Right?
Like... So Dev wants to go to Med Bay. And he's just going to say, you and the security go to Moxie. That's where the trouble is. And I'm just going to go on my own to Med Bay to check on Alex, which is funny because, like, there are four security people plus the head of security. When they get to Moxie, they're not let in. They have to stay outside. So they're useless there. But it does allow Dev to just wander off unprotected. So we get our second scene here. I didn't bracket these together, but like this is our Mars Marine, that kid. He's upset about the revolt happening. Avery says she wants to go to the moon and not Mars, and I'm thinking to myself, well, the moon's where your grandparents died heroically, and Mars is where your father died in shame. So, and this is when she reveals, yes, I'm actually a Stevens, and it leads to an amazing moment where it's like, whoa. that Danny Stevens?
The Danny Stevens?
And it's like, oh man. She's like, yeah. And she's like, oh, but that means that your grandparents were the heroes of on the moon? She's like, yeah. And then in a moment that made me laugh out loud because I had forgotten this detail until it's mentioned. Oh, and that means your uncle is the one who bombed the space center? And she's like, Jimmy. Yep, that's me.
That's me. What a family. I got you beat for family drama. The interesting point here, too, there's a brief news clip before this scene where we learn, A, three people have died already on the Mars riots. So I guess maybe some of those people who get shot did die something
and before
else
they
happened.
Before they cut off communication, too, right?
Right, right. So, and then there is a scene that is very clearly a reference where they talk about Bragg being told about this during a high school visit in Florida.
It's literally George W. Bush being told about 9/11.
9/11, yep, 100%. The whole shot of that scene is exactly
He's in a school in Florida, the whole thing,
Yep, the whole thing.
Yeah, that's the historical reference they're making there. Absolutely.
Sorry, historical reference. Oh my God, 25 years ago. Okay, yep. It is historical.
Yeah, it is. So, let's see. A bunch of... Oh, okay. Elena talks her way into the Moxie.
I like that scene because there's the woman who's like, look, I know who you are. If you go in, they're not going to let you leave. And she's like, good.
Yeah.
Because she's got to talk to Titan.
Yeah. And so she goes in there, and the guy, whose name I don't remember now, who's the guy? Who's our brandishing a gun guy?
Gerardo.
Well, so Gerardo is like going off. When she gets in there. And Alita just says, are you an effing idiot? And it's like, yes, you're just saying what we're all thinking, Alita. This guy's a moron.
Yep.
And she just walks in and they're like, Miles is like, listen to her. Hey, we got a spaceship up there, dummy. And it's like, okay, untie them. Are you trying to kill? And the point here is, if we treat them like this, we're no better than the people we're fighting. Like, you have just decided that you're going to tie a bunch of people up and treat people like crap. What are we even doing here, right? This guy is just angry and wants to fight. And Miles is like, this is really stupid. So, and I love Alita's point where she says, if I were you, I'd have somebody looking at these fusion reactors.
Yeah, I shouldn't have those unregulated fusion reactors.
that are showing red things on them. Yeah. It's like, yeah, maybe. Maybe you're, because again, this guy is an idiot. What are you even doing? This is not a place to just hang around and to have slogans. This is like the heart of this base. And if it isn't functional, the mission's going to fail and those people are going to die. The whole base might die. And what's the whole point of this if you're just going to destroy the base? Like, what are you even doing? So,
yeah. And there's so earlier on, we had gotten the scene where the Sojourner crew is trying to reach Mars and cannot get in touch with them. But they hear from the Kurrigan mission. Who's like, something bad's happened over there.
Things are happening.
We don't really know everything, but here's what we know.
And they end up contacting Houston because that gets mentioned in a little bit. So a bunch of guys do find Dev as was planned, and they beat the crap out of Dev.
Yep.
Hey, rich guy.
He's got one moment there where he's like, maybe he can handle this. And then it's like, no, there's like five of them.
Yeah, no, he handles the one guy, and then the other... Yep. Four of them
Four.
Beat the crap out
Just
of them.
Just kick him.
That's the,
Boyd
gets to a full locker this time. That's great. She's confronted by Fred. Fred is fascinating.
Feels like an opportunist.
Yeah, I was going to say he's a go-along-to-get-along cop in the sense of, like, he doesn't like some of the things that they're doing, but he's never going to stop it.
Yeah.
He's never going to say no. He's never going to opt out to the point where he killed the guy on the surface. Like, I mean, but like he's, I don't, it's fascinating because he doesn't play as evil or I guess
he's
what,
not like
what
Palmer,
I say is,
right?
He is the,
Palmer seems like a villain. He Palmer's seems like the, a
Fred is
schmo.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, he's the banality of evil too, right? Like he's just going along and just following orders, right?
Just following orders. Yeah.
But he's actually a monster. He's like still like, I'm so sorry. He says to her, and she's like, what you did is unforgivable, right? Which I think is a good thing to underline in this whole episode is what you did is unforgivable. And in fact, what Miles is saying in the Moxie is we need to not be like that, right? Like if we do things that are unforgivable, why are we even here? We need to be better than them. But Fred is like, yeah, you're like, oh, but we're friends and I'm just a good guy. And she's like, no, you are not. You are not. And he's like, I'm just worried about you. You're going to get... And he's like, hey, I'm your friend. We're going to kill you, though, if you keep doing this. Bye. Like, yeah,
thanks.
Thanks, friend. Anyway, I like the way that character is pitched. That he's not. Yeah. He's coded as a friend and a helper who cares in all ways, and he is not. Which I think, especially given that he's a police officer, essentially, this show knows exactly what it's doing with that character. Oh no, I'm your friendly neighborhood peace officer. I'm here to help the community, but if you don't do what we say, you know, it's like, well, what? That is what Fred represents here. Arena says. Your colleague is right, Miles. You need leverage here. Which, again, what is Arena doing?
I don't know what her game is, but I love so much that she's like, yes, you need to follow through on your threats. Otherwise, yeah, there's no point to it.
You need leverage. I'm not sure.
Okay, so thanks, lady.
Here's the thing. Arena, scary. A villain.
Yes.
Right? Here's my question. I go into this episode thinking, what is Arena going to do here that's like super evil and bad? And this is the moment where I think to myself, she's probably still going to be doing something bad. But
oh yes.
But what if Arena is actually has not forgiven the government for
the Russian government
for putting her in Siberia?
I think we've seen there's like some tension with the governor and her where mm-hmm. she thinks he's an idiot. I think part of her feels like, well, I could do this job better than him. And she probably could.
Certainly.
And she knows what she's about. And there is certainly the possibility for power and influence.
That's right. That's right.
And I think that is appealing to her. I don't think she is a person with loyalties per se.
Yeah. I think, and that's sort of what I'm getting at here is that I don't think she's necessarily going to be making decisions because in the end she wants Mother Russia to do great. I think maybe that's the purpose of her Siberian flashback that we got.
Right.
Is maybe she's more of a free agent who's just looking out for herself. We don't know, right? We haven't seen her since 2003, but apparently she's an executive at Kurigan, right? So, like, maybe she is. Maybe she's just working for the people back in Moscow, and that's what this is all about. Maybe not. Maybe she's got a different game that she's playing. I don't know. But this is a moment where she does say to Miles, like, yeah, you got to play this right. You need leverage. And maybe she's trying to accelerate what's going on in a way that will benefit her. But our the hot-headed guy, he needs to shut up. Put some tape on that guy. And it's like, you're right. They don't care about the governor. It's the iridium. The asteroid is our leverage. No iridium shipments. Let's come up with a list of demands. And then they record a message that is read by the governor that's going to be sent back to Earth. And this is a really good little moment where it's like, if we send this, they say to Miles as his hand is hovering over the mouse to click the send button, there's no going back. And Miles says, quite rightly, there's already no going back.
Yeah,
this is not the we crossed
the Rubicon,
people. We can't
walk
it
back. Yes, exactly. 20 miles back. Sorry.
Yeah,
that is where that was.
Yeah,
I love this scene too because the governor just looks so unhappy. The way he's like reading a hostage statement.
Yeah,
and you're gonna do this, and you're gonna do this, and you can see him kind of like sighing, like, oh, this is so dumb.
Yeah,
I can't believe I'm doing this, but like. Yeah, they got a gun to his head, and it's not like he's going to fight back or say, no, I'm not going to do this, and force them to shoot him, right? Like, he is still at the end of the day, like many politicians, he is a save-your-own-skin kind of guy, and he is just going to be like, well, this is probably tanking my future in politics, but on the other hand, I will be alive.
I'll be alive. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, and was this the moment where he says, would you care for my opinion? And everybody goes,
no.
No.
No one wants to know. No,
I love
know.
That made me laugh out loud because nobody likes him.
Yeah, he sucks. He sucks. Yeah, everybody. Suck. Yeah, everybody thinks he sucks. Here's a surprise.
Here's
a surprise. Lee appears in the Zocalo.
Huh?
Lee. He's like, hey, I begged him to let me.
Did I miss anything?
Come back. When I heard the Moxie was taken, I asked to come back. We can take you over to the ISN base where it's safe. And his, to his wife, and his wife is like, the people who helped you need your help now.
Now, this is fascinating because, like, there's a group. We don't really see much here, but, like, right. there's clearly a group of ISN people with him.
Mm-hmm.
They are slightly coded as, like, some sort of security force.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? Like, an escort of some kind.
Yep.
I feel like the way they're kind of set up and they're, like, they didn't need to send four random people with him. So, no. Do we have, like, now kind of another paramilitary force on station? And what side are they going to take? And what is their interest in this? So, we have an entirely separate player here now.
Yeah.
That so, we my don't question really is, know much about.
No, we know nothing. We have not seen them, right?
Yeah.
In fact, with the way this show works, I would not be surprised if in our next episode we see what Lee's been doing.
Yeah. I kind of felt like the way they appear in this episode reminded me of the others from Lost.
Yeah.
Where it's like, all of a sudden it's like, oh yes, all these other people who just happen to live right over the rise and they have their own little world that we don't know anything about.
And we don't talk to them.
We don't talk to them.
So, yeah, there's also the question of, are they help? Is it they need Lee's help and that Lee could actually be a representative and a figurehead or maybe even one of the leaders of this, what's going to happen here at Happy Valley? Or is it we need to bring the help of the people over at ISN to bear at this, and that makes it an international incident in a totally different way. I don't know which is which. Is it Lee? Is it ISN? Like, Lee doesn't speak for ISN. They just brought him there. So is it Lee returning to where he fled so that he can be one of the leaders of this, or get a resolution here, or is that not it? I mean, obviously he's the first man on Mars. I don't know. We don't get any resolution of that in the rest of this episode, though, so it's just out there.
We'll find out
next time. We get Lily and Alex set up since episode one. This is
teenagers.
He gets the thing where it's like he was really worried about you. And they talk, and he says it was scary. I thought I might use you. It's super lose you. It might super awkward. But they eventually they kiss. That we know was coming since episode one, and it's great. Yep. Those crazy kids. Those love crazy finds kids. A way even in the midst of all of this madness.
The I had to tell the doctors what to do. You know,
yeah. like yeah. So that's there. And then we get our response from our I'll also say our. Entirely always villain-coded United States president.
Yep. He's nobody likes anything about him either.
He's never been a good guy. He's always been terrible. The whole point at the beginning of the season when we see that he's the president of the United States is that means that they're the bad guys in this show. and he says, we will not negotiate with terrorists. Not now, not ever. We will give you nothing. You can keep your iridium. You need us to survive. We won't provide you with anything. Let's see how long you can live without our help. Which is, that is the nub of it, right? It's like, you can declare your independence from Earth, essentially, but can you survive without being supplied by Earth? So he says, you know, let's see how long you can survive. And that leads to Dev stumbling back, having had the crap beaten out of him. And they're like, get a first aid kiss. Like, he might need more than that, folks.
More than that, yeah.
And you know, sir, are you okay? And we see Dev, and he's all beat up, and he just says, lock the doors.
Lock the doors. There's also a brief shot in the middle there, too, where we see Avery and the Marines, who are basically like, come back to base. Like, which is
they're recalled to base.
You're going to get deployed, right? You're on standby, at least, for the something. It's, you know, again,
well, that's right.
The fan... continues to get hit.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the question. Obviously, that's been set up, but like the question is, it's a difference between we're not going to send you anything and we're going to send troops to take over.
Right, right. And what's interesting about this is timelines matter, right? Like, it takes them, we learned, a month? If they're going to send troops or if they want troops on hand, they have to send them now in order to have them there.
Right.
Are they, and like, the other wrinkle we have in here is ISN, right? Like, is ISN still getting supplied? Because they have their own ships. Is the M6 embargo going to affect them? Are they going to blockade it?
That's a great point. And then and does this create a military flashpoint on Mars between the two groups of Earth powers?
Right. And yes, exactly. Because we already knew there were some tensions on Earth. The Soviet Union is starting to crack. The iridium, like uneven distribution of iridium, is causing economic woes. So is, you know... If ISN and the Mars base like sort of declare an alliance or whatever? Is the M6 kind of, do they end run M6 and be like, well, we're going to secede essentially from the M6 and join ISN and they're going to be our lifeline?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that erupt in war back on Earth?
Yeah. Or you send the military in. And again, I say that thing is you can send the military in, but what's your end game there? What's your end game? Right. Is it we're going to occupy and we're going to subjugate everybody who's there, kill
send
people
them back,
kill people. We have to, yeah, round them up and load them onto ships and send them home against their will. Like, I mean, there's a plan to be had there, but like, and then what's the cost of that?
Right.
It's not that they couldn't try it, but then you're declaring war on this group of civilians, largely. But I think that's the point of this show in some ways is that this sort of like, okay, let's say that there's going to be an independent Mars at some point. How does that play out? How would that even happen?
And this is how it has the, you know, we have the echoes of, say, the American Revolution in here, right? Where it's like, well, the colonizing power is like a month away, right? Like, sure, they can say they have authority over us, but we're over here doing this stuff. And like we are on the ground and we have the infrastructure and the control and stuff.
Yeah,
but you're dependent on the supplies a lot more, which is an interesting twist
Although, on that. Although depending on how they write the show, it could be revealed that actually, you know, whether it's from ISN or whether it's things that they have set up that they can make it work without Earth. They've never really thought about it, but they could. And so we'll have to see how that dynamic plays out because they can, you know, they can reveal knowledge of this world that we don't necessarily have,
right,
that they may be more self-sufficient. But I was thinking about one of my favorite podcasts, The Rest is History, two British historians, and they did some episodes about the American Revolution. And I think it's very funny from their perspective, from their perspective, we're a bunch of tax dodgers, but from their perspective, they said there's no way that the Americans would not win. For a bunch of reasons. And one of them is the basic, like, maybe you could send some British people to the coasts, but like, it's an enormous, like, there's no way, they're so far away, there's so many people in North America there, and that, like, even if you take over a few cities, like, the rest of the country is not going to be under your control at all. And I was thinking about that in the context of this show, too, which is, like, the amount, like, if you wanted to mount an effort to turn this thing into a military base and ship everybody home, you could do it, but it would be difficult and a lot of people would die. And so that's the question is, and they've got the asteroid too, right? So like, what's the sabotage that could happen, that you know, just because you think you can come and take it all over doesn't mean you can. It could get broken, so we'll have to see. I mean, this is the you know, we've passed the halfway point now, but we've got four more episodes to figure out what is going on here. Plus, you know, Titan. There's mission to Titan going on.
Still a mission to Titan. And we should mention, I think, because this came up as the week we're recording this, if we peek behind the curtains for a second, that they announced the sixth season of For All Mankind. It has been renewed for a sixth season, but it will be the final season.
Yes.
Which will bring things up to date with basically now, the present day. So some of where we end up this season is, of course, setting that up and also setting up sort of the end arc of the show.
Right.
So yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff to come, I think, and unfold in these last four episodes.
Yeah, for sure. Looking forward to it. All right, but that brings us to the end of this episode. I hope nobody made any sudden moves. But we'll be back next time to talk about episode 7. Until then, do svidaniya, Dan.
Do svidaniya, Tavrish.